Dead. Second dead.
Yeah. Was he amazed at that?
Oh, yeah. They're so amazed, you know. Of course, being Buddhist, you know, this is part of their background of thought, thinking, you know. It's all karma, you know.
Yeah.
So, which is to our benefit. Later on, he and his wife came to Seattle when I was there during the light show days, and I hosted him when his wife came and helped arrange some visits and so forth. So,
right,
but he had money.
Right, but their idea of karma is maybe our idea of synchronicity.
Similar, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the other question I wanted to ask is, you come to San Francisco and you're kind of not thinking, you've dropped Krishnamurti a bit. You've had enough of that. You're looking for a different scene.
Yeah, well, I felt that I understood, you know, and it was up to me to do something about it. I couldn't go on listening to him for another 20 years and belong to the tennis shoe club, you know. I wanted to, okay, I've listened to him. I intellectually understand what he's saying. Now it's up to me to do something, you know, get off the pot, do something. So that was my quest then. But I did see Krishnamurti, you know, again, a number of just five or six times after that.
Right, but you...
Maybe not five.
You were further, I don't know, you experienced him personally, noticed he was a man, knew he was on a mission. You were puzzled by learning that, but you felt that he did have a message, and you got it. And you said, well, now I got to figure out how to apply it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't feel enlightened.
What intrigued me about Krishnamurti in the beginning was that he was rebellious and dropped out of the Theosophical Society and became a teacher on his own. And I admired him very much for, you know, doing that himself. Now I know that there were reasons behind that are not just because he wanted to be on his own. There was a quarrel, family quarrel going on in the Theosophical Society about Krishnaji.
Was that about his affair? Are you talking about the affair was the quarrel?
No, jealousy. See, he was chosen to be the world teacher, picked out by A. Besson and Leadbeater, and they said that he was the vehicle for the world teacher, the Lord Maitreya, Buddha. And there were others that wanted to be that. They thought, no, they're wrong. In any organization, you have this ongoing problem. You know, wherever you have organization, a group, a following, a leader, a structure, you have dissent. You know, you have my way, your way. In a marriage, it's the same thing. The wife says this, the husband says that. There, you know, it just, you have division. It is innately part of the human structure, nature of our consciousness. We divide. You can't help it.
Right, so you mean there were other people in the Theosophical Society that thought they were the new Maitreya?
They thought there was another American boy was maybe the vehicle.
Oh, and we ever heard much about them? Is that written up in the Krishnamurti biography?
It's all written up, yeah. There's a lot of information on it. He was an American boy, and he was championed by another aspect of the Theosophical Society. See, the society had a structure, a hierarchy. There was a president and his lieutenants, and, you know, and they were all, and woman dancer, actress, she was the world mother, and she was in competition with the world teacher. Later on, she had a school of Indian Bharatanatyam dance in Madras. And
so, that wasn't that wasn't the mother of the Sri Aurobindo temple or place.
No,
not that.
No,
okay.
No.
So there was almost like a gender fight. There was the patriarchy and the feminists, and the one wanted the mother,
yeah,
and some wanted.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. Now, what happened to the American boy?
I don't know. He faded away eventually. I guess he gave up. I don't know what happened.
But and that would be in the 20s. See, Krishnamurti leaves in 1929.
Early, yeah, middle 20s there, yeah.
No, 1929. That's when he gives his famous speech in 1929.
Middle
20s. No, 1929. I know that he was 33, 1929.
Maybe 24, 25, something like that. I don't know exactly.
No, I do know, Bob. I'm good on dates. It's 1929 when
he gave his famous talk.
And it was broadcast.
Truth is a pathless land. Yeah, truth is a pathless land. You cannot approach it by any path whatsoever.
And it was broadcast, and James Joyce heard it, and James Joyce played with it in Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, right.
He has Krishnamurti in Finnegan's Wake. So I'm saying that's 1929. I'm pretty positive about
that.
You're
right. I'm saying that the boy was in the mid-20s.
Oh, okay. And so Krishnamurti, in a sense, was aware of this division and had a bit of integrity. He says, well, I'm going to get out of this fight. You know, I don't want to be a part of a fight. So even though there was a reason, an institutional reason, he did sort of make a move of integrity, didn't he?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. You know, Krishnamurti's brother, when he died, that was a tremendous shock to Krishnamurti. They were very attached. And Leadbeater had promised Krishnamurti that he wouldn't die. He would survive. And when he did die, he lost a lot of faith in Leadbeater and also his pronouncements and his occult observations and so forth.
And how many years is that before 1929? Is that like 2 years before?
2 or 3 years, something like that.
Yeah. So he's getting disillusioned.
I have my own take on this. It's not based on anything actual. It's just my own observation and psychological, you know, interpretation of it.
Okay. Yeah, we want to hear it.
Okay. Well, Krishnamurti was in Ojai, and he was staying in the little cottage there that was provided for him. And there was a girl named Roslyn staying there, a young girl that he was infatuated with, and his brother, Nitya. And Raj Gopal, which was Krishnamurti's secretary, who later he had a scuffle with and a parting of the ways. Raj Gopal had married Roslyn, and they had a daughter, which wrote a book on exposing Krishnamurti's love affairs. So anyway, whatever happened under the pepperwood tree, some mystical transformation took place in Krishnamurti's consciousness. And that caused him to see the absurdity of organization, that there was any way you could organize truth. You couldn't organize truth. And there was no path that led to it. There was no technique that would bring it about. What happened to Krishnamurti, it's hard to say, you know, but some mystical experience came about because he was meditating, he was sitting quietly, and if there's any truth to the fact that he is a incarnation of this entity called the Maitreya, then that entity took over and J.K. became the vehicle for the expression of the Maitreya Buddha's teaching, which is the teachings of Krishnamurti. Now, you have to, you know, this is what the propaganda says happened. I feel that he saw that he could no longer be a part of the TS, the Theosophical Society, that he had to break away. And the only way he could do that would be to disassociate himself completely, which he did. So that gave him his own power base to...
Okay, we had a little interruption there, but it says here in the Wikipedia that in 1922, Krishnamurti and his brother Nitya met Rosalind Williams, the sister of a local theosophist, this is in Ojai, California, who eventually became close to them both. For the first time, the brothers were without immediate supervision from the Theosophical Society minders. They spent their time in nature hikes and picnics with friends, in spiritual contemplation, and planning their course within the World Teacher Project. Krishnamurti and Nitya found the Ojai Valley to be very agreeable, and eventually a trust formed by supporters purchased for them the cottage and surrounding property, which henceforth became Krishnamurti's official place of residence. And it's in this year, 1922, that he has his life-changing experience. So, Robert, pick it up from August 22 when he has his experience. Do you have a theory about what the experience might have been?
This is just my take on it, you know.
Yeah.
From what I understand, there, you know, one can have various kinds of experiences, religious experiences, mystical experiences, and then the full, you know, blown experience of enlightenment. And people often think that they have a mystical experience. They often think it is an enlightenment because it has values and overtones and feelings of that. But talking with Yuji many times, he's pointed out that mystical experiences, though change your life, they're not it. And he rejected them, his own experiences, because he felt that they were just a level of experience only, and were part of a history of mystical experiences that belong to the culture of mankind. What happened to J.K., I don't know what happened, but he felt that he became liberated from the sense of egocentric structure of self, and he experienced what he describes as an enlightenment. And who am I to say? I mean, I'm not a judge. I can't judge in any way. But what I feel happened is after that life-changing experience in which he freed himself from the structure of Krishnamurti as an individual, as a person, as a history, as a past, and so forth, he then saw more clearly what he was able to do as an individual and fulfill perhaps the prophecy that he was this world teacher that was prophesied by Leadbeater, Besson, and other seers that were part of the Theosophical Society. So then he saw the opportunity to become a teacher on his own, and to disassociate himself with the Theosophical Society, which he did. And he was very careful. He didn't want to hurt Annie Besant's feelings because she was very dear to him. She was like a mother to him after he attached himself to her, because his own mother died when he was a child. But he told her very clearly that what he was doing, that he had to do, and it was, you know, part of the plan, part of the plan that she foretold in her occult observations and so forth. And Leadbeater, there was some tension there between Krishnamurti and Leadbeater, namely because Leadbeater had been his mentor, his guide, his interpreter, who was evaluating his experiences that he was having and guiding him in a sense. And then when Krishnamurti's brother died, that caused a monkey wrench in the system, because Leadbeater had told Krishnamurti that he wouldn't die, he would survive his illness. And so that kind of shook the foundations of Krishnamurti's trust in Leadbeater's observations and so forth. So I think then the break took place, and he saw that he had to be a teacher on his own, and he founded as his own organization the Krishnamurti Writings, which became known as. And
right, it says here, Robert, in the Wikipedia, that Leadbeater and other theosophists, although they expected the vehicle in quotes, to have certain paranormal experiences, they were mystified by these developments in 1922 and were at a loss to explain the whole thing. The process, which Krishnamurti or somebody called it the process, and the inability of Leadbeater to explain it satisfactorily, if at all, had other consequences, according to biographer R. Vernon. He says, quote, "The process at Ojai," that'd be 1922, "whatever its cause or validity, was a cataclysmic milestone for Krishnamurti. Up until this time, his spiritual progress, checkered though it might have been, had been planned with solemn deliberation by theosophy's grandees or mentors. Something new had now occurred for which Krishna," he calls him Krishna, "for which Krishnamurti's training had not entirely prepared him. A burden was lifted from his conscience, and he took his first step towards becoming an individual," which may have been what he called the process through his whole life, all these breaks or something, and becoming an individual or enlightened. "In terms of his future role as a teacher, the process was his bedrock. It had come to him alone, and it had not been planted in him by his mentors. It provided Krishna with the soil in which his newfound spirit of confidence and independence could take root." End of quote by the biographer. Then it says, Finally, the unexpected death of his brother Nitya on November 11, 1925, at age 27 from tuberculosis after a long history with the disease, fundamentally shook Krishnamurti's belief in theosophy and his faith in the leaders of the Theosophical Society. According to eyewitness accounts, the news, quote, "of the death broke him down completely," unquote. He struggled for days to overcome his sorrow, eventually, quote, "going through an inner revolution, finding new strength," unquote. The experience of his brother's death apparently shattered any remaining illusions, and things would never be the same again. Now, the thing is, I'm interested in, are you implying that Rosalind, the young woman, was a factor in this changing thing, or you're not saying that at all? Because later the daughter comes out that Rosalind had an affair with Krishnamurti. And were they factors in him leaving the Krishnamurti, the Theosophic group, in 1929 when he made his famous speech? Are you saying there's something there?
No, I don't think so, no. They were infatuated. He was infatuated with her, and she liked him, no doubt. Yeah, they're obvious. They had an affair later in life. Later, much later.
Not much later. Just an interruption.
Not that we know of. Not that we know of, but from the biographers. But
right. I just want to say that the... I want to say that Scott should maybe put the mute on. Scott, I can hear Scott breathing, so I don't know if he knows that. So go ahead, Robert. Robert, well, just you were.
Whatever happened, happened, and whether you call it the process, this process seems to be it goes on in other individuals too. Yuji often spoke. There would be times where he would want to be by himself, be alone, and not see anybody. And then afterwards he would say that something was worth changing in him, you know. So there are physiological changes take place in the body, and some people might interpret them as psychological changes in their nature, but
Well, when you saw Krishnamurti, you saw Krishnamurti meditating on the grounds at Adyar occasionally by himself, right?
Yeah, sitting there under a tree.
And he was
in a posture. Yeah, sitting in a simple cross-legged and sitting there. Very picturesque. Very quiet.
And emanating that you shouldn't go over and interrupt them.
Right. Oh, no. You wouldn't want to do that.
The Godfather is being quiet to do not to mess with it.
Godfather's in repose there,
So we're talking about this change, and it says here that he made the announcement, final announcement, on August 3rd, 1929. That's when he gave a speech in Ammen, a place called Ammen in the Netherlands, at the annual Star Camp.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I might have interrupted you. You were talking about this change and how he... You were talking about you found out later there was a conflict. Now, the first conflict was over if the American boy was in the mid-20s. That is after his breakthrough in 1922.
That would be before his 1922 enlightenment.
Oh, okay, it's before.
Yeah.
All right, so it was in the teens.
Yeah.
Because they started promoting... I was just thinking maybe they're promoting the American kid after 1922 when Krishnamurti was starting to go on his own.
Yeah.
No, you're saying not.
No.
Okay.
Eventually, Leadbeater went to Australia and was busy with the creating a theosophical foundation, network there. And he let a lot of people in Adyar didn't like Leadbeater. They found his ways too outrageous. So.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about Krishnamurti and the changes you went through. I guess what would be your point? You're talking, you see, you start off saying that you had a theory on why he left. What is your theory on why he left?
He left because he became clear on what his position was. He became clear about his life, and he saw that it could not be involved with an organization like the Theosophical Society, even though they parented him. They were his parents.
Yeah.
They gave him birth. They supported him. They found him, educated him, tutored him, promoted him, and then he walked away from them. But this was necessary. He had to simplify his teaching program, shall we call it that. He didn't want a big worldwide organization with the Masonic order this and that order that, and all the different levels and hierarchical systems that the Theosophists were involved with. And the world mother, what part you play. He said, I'm enough. Enough is enough. I don't want any part of it. I'm going to do this on my own, by myself, simply, and I don't need a big organization to do this. I just need a time, place, and date, and I'll be there.
Yeah. Right. Now, what's interesting is that the icon of him leaving, as the century unfolds by the 80s and 90s, that is the... For a lot of people, that was the amazing thing about him, that he dropped the role. He was like the first executive dropout, a corporate executive dropout. Yeah. That move by him became the big symbol of him as a symbol of autonomy from institutions. As the culture moved towards that in the 60s, 70s, 80s, that act was the major image that people have of him.
Yeah, well, his statement, truth is a pathless land. You cannot approach it by any path whatsoever. Okay, full stop, end. That means no institutions. No ashrams. No holy business, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, there is no system. There is no... he didn't go so far as to say no teaching. He was very clever there. He did hold out and say, there is a teaching. The teaching was all his talks that he gave all over the world, verbatim.
Yeah, talks. UG went further. UG went further.
He went further.
UG said, there's no teaching. There's no teaching.
No. There's no teacher, no teaching. Then what the hell are you talking for? He'd say, because you're asking me questions.
Yeah. Krishnamurti would say that. JK would say, UG said, he's talking because they're asking questions, but Krishnamurti never said he's talking because he's being asked questions. JK never said that. No. He thought it was important that he talk. He would say that we talk together.
I don't think anybody ever asked him why he was talking. I think people were too polite. They assumed he was the authority, you know. Even though
he said
you have to throw even me out.
That's right. But he would say the speaker, ignore the fact that I'm the speaker. I'm going to say some insights on the psychological process as if we were two people walking in the woods and being serious about consciousness.
Yeah, but what difference does it make if you say the speaker or he or we took a walk in the woods? What difference does it make? You know, it's a game. It's a game there. Or just another game he played, he would say, all the gurus out there are promising, you know, enlightenment, you know. I would say, what the hell are you? You know, aren't you a guru too? You know? Yeah, a bit of a guru, maybe.
Yeah, he'd say that. Did you get to confront him in 66 in Rishi Valley on that question?
No.
When did you confront him with that? You did that later?
No, I never talked directly.
You're just imagining that he would say that he was a guru, or that he was a bit of a guru.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the thing is that...
In his talks, he would refer to the gurus out there that are plaguing the world with their spirituality, you know. He never said bogus or phony, but those are Yuji's words.
Yes.
But anyway, So
okay. Okay. So you're thinking
here's the thing. Bob, JK wanted to preserve the opportunity to talk to people from a platform all over the world because he felt he had a message to give. And the message was his teaching. And he felt that he was the communicator. He was the vehicle that would give that teaching to the world, so he had to maintain a platform for that. Okay. But he wanted to do it simply, not make a big, no discipleship, no you're next, and, you know, no secretaries, that sort of thing. Because he was through with all that. He saw the problems that created. But even Raj Gopal, who was his secretary for the Krishnamurti writings, eventually caused problems for him of sorts.
That's right. And he had to simplify further and form the Krishnamurti Foundation around himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the new authorities have taken hold now. There are new Krishnamurti authorities. Yeah, you can't get away from it. You cannot escape it. Just as the UG has been dead over a year now, there are people cropping up here and there, all claiming, that make claims that something has happened to them. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so we brought all this digression up because I was asking about the interesting state of mind you're in leaving Krishnamurti. You wanted to do something on your own. Or do something to yourself, and then it turned out to be this tribal reality in San Francisco. You joined into the group mind of the hippie revolution.
Right. Yeah, I got seduced by the generation of love. I was very open to the young people's ideas for wanting to change. And then I wanted to point out that where they were looking was the wrong place. That was my interest.
Yeah, you had a bit of a mission. Did you even think?
Yeah.
Did you do any speaking? Maybe this is when Worcester comes in, but did you do any speaking in 67 while organizing the New Light Show? Did you go and do some speaking, or was that about a year later in Seattle?
Later on.
Yeah. In other words,
the first talks I gave were at Washington University with Tom Gunn, who was the student body president. I became friends with him. He used to hang out at the rock show concerts, so we became friends. And because I was a hippie, you know, and so he organized them.
But I'm seeing, having read your book, that you got involved in this group mind, and that was great. Yeah. But within a year, it was all falling apart. People are dying in Ashbury. And that's when you sort of started, well, I'll be the critic, and I can tell them why it isn't working. They went the wrong way over the past year. That's the transformation. But that's going to lead to Seattle. Now, let's go into, so you're in Seattle, you're in San Francisco inventing a way to do a light show, trying to get gigs. It's hard. You're competing with other light shows. And you said
David Wister
came on the scene. Before you go to- And did he offer you something, or what did he say?
Well, he had a friend from Seattle, kind of an entrepreneur, and that he wanted to maybe, he came up to see us at our light show, and then offered us that he would finance the first show that we would do, and that was the one that we talked about in the past. The first night show we did in Seattle.
Yeah, you're talking about Boyd.
Same.
Yeah, you're talking about Boyd? Oh, Wister Brutton. Boyd. It's not Avaton. What's his name?
Winston.
It's not Winston Turnbull. Winston. Yeah. Dave Wister brings Winston to you.
Yeah.
And Winston says, I got something going on up in Seattle for you.
Yeah, I'll promote it. I'll be the promoter. I'll guarantee your hall and expenses and so forth. And we said, okay. So we had a soundtrack that we made. The local FM station, KPFM, I got to know one of the disc jockeys there and asked him to do a soundtrack, hour and a half soundtrack, and of the current, latest, best music of the day. And he did. And that's how I got introduced to Pink Floyd's music, because I didn't know Pink Floyd existed until we got this on this tape.
Is this the radio show? Is this station in Seattle or San Francisco?
No, San Francisco. It was the first rock station.
Okay.
KPFM. Oh, yeah. There were two of them. M and then A. It became later.
Yeah, no, KPFA was already happening. That was the Pacifica network.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know Crosby was the owner, and he sold it, and then another KSAN opened up. It was KSAN was the next one. And then Crosby bought Chemo TV, and that's how I got connected to him.
All right, so you're talking about the two stations.
Can we take a break here now?
Yeah, I just want to clarify that. What you're saying, the two stations are KPFA and KSAN, and it's the KPFA DJ that made the soundtrack.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right, so we're you're finished for tonight.
Yeah. Okay. When's our next session?
Let's just take a pause here.